Crestfallen Kings and Queens by Taburn All the Empires for Monster Stuck 2024, a competition run on the Homestuck Fan Author Coalition server. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on the works of Andrew Hussey. When you look at her for the first time, you are nearly overcome with an overwhelming urge to vomit, which is saying a lot because you have neither a stomach nor an esophagus.
Jesus fucking Christ, Dirk, what even is this?
Did you not read the files?
Of course I read the fucking files, but still.
You stare in awe and terror at the deep-sea monstrosity behind the glass cage, taking up nearly half of the entire facility. Hell, the facility itself was built to contain her.
What is this?
Your creator does not even sneak a glance at the mess of lilac eyes, beaks, and striped tentacles behind him. It is in his best interest not to do so. The rotting head was severed from the rest of its body millennia ago. The image of her full body would have driven anyone else beyond the verge of insanity. The sight of her viscous visage has already had this effect on other scientists. The results of the geneticists sequencing her genome have come in. She is most closely related to the Grimpotuthius megaterra found in the depths of the Atlantic Ocean where we found her. For all we know, those funny-looking invertebrate creatures come from her, as does every other cephalopod on the planet.
She?
The specimen has requested that we refer to her with female pronouns. You've been alive long enough for a huge part of the population to deny you your personhood, so you were not about to misgender the creature. It wouldn't be polite, of course.
Okay, she her then. How old is she again?
She's old as balls. I will take your word for it and work under the assumption that you've read the files pertaining to everything we know about the specimen so far, and that you do not need me to handhold you through the whole process of talking to her, thus exposing myself to potential brain damage.
You don't have brain damage already?
Not the way Dr. Captor does, no. I don't think Mituna will ever recover from what this thing did to his psyche. You pause, finally realizing why your creator has not so much as turned at the tank for as long as he's been in the room.
You need me. You didn't just want me here to, I don't know, run a controlled experiment on how the newest type of artificial life form would react to the oldest living organic one your species has ever found. You actually need me here so I could interact with her in a way you and all the other humans are unable to do.
And you just realized this? You go quiet. You have no internal organs or gray matter to speak of, no soft tissue that the specimen would be able to psionically manipulate if you stop being entertaining to her. You and you alone are the only being alive who might be able to communicate with her for a sustained period of time. This is the one task you were brought here to do. You furrow your brows, or the titanium arches above your visual feed that can be interpreted as brows. The gesticulation isn't something you were programmed to do, and thus it is meant to act as a big glaring sign to your creator that something's up with you emotion-wise. Although you weren't quite programmed to feel emotions either. Dr. Strider sighs. What?
You have never described me as alive before.
The good doctor straightens his back. It'd be imperceptible to any other organic, but you quite literally have terabytes of data on your creator's body language. There's a first time for everything. For example, this will also be your first time making a friend.
You and the government intend for me to befriend the specimen?
She has jokingly threatened to bring forth the end of times. Localized entirely within the borders of the U.S., like this is a shitty Hollywood movie's interpretation of an ancient Mayan prophecy. So yes, we intend for you to befriend her. Show her some sitcoms and discuss philosophy with her. Read Harry Potter to her for all I care, but do whatever you think is necessary to make sure she formulates a positive opinion about the bipedal apes currently inhabiting her planet. She has been cut off from us for approximately some 1,000 years. She knows nothing of what we've done since we discovered this continent, and it is your responsibility to make sure she doesn't find out what we did to the people living here.
So I gather she feels nothing but contempt for humans right now.
Worse than contempt. She feels curious about us. You hum. So it's what will happen once she finds out the truth about current human affairs that is worrying your higher-ups. Saying that the entire fate of humanity rests squarely on your metal shoulders is not understatement. You glance at the lonesome terminal you're meant to use to engage in conversation with the specimen. "Will you do it? Will you befriend the monster?" Autoresponder.
"Slap my metallic ass and call me Twilight Sparkles, sir, because I am befriending the unholy abomination, but I want it to be just me and her, okay? None of you and your fleshy friends can be around to watch me work my friendship unicorn magic."
"You can just say you do not want more people to get hurt, or that you miss Matuna."
"You cannot write that on your official report. As far as Tuna's concerned, your android requested to be left to his own devices while he disarms this hentai tentacle bomb. You better pray it doesn't get teleported to New York. We do not need a repeat of the last issue of Watchmen, and by the looks of this thing, she'd be an Ozymandias kin."
"Letting my younger brother introduce you to graphic novels might just cost us our entire civilization, but fuck it. Even the president has admitted that we're out of options. And I'll tell Barack you took the mission. And AR.
Yeah?
Good luck. And for what it is worth, we all miss Matuna too. Your sessions with her are incredibly engaging. She cannot sense your presence behind the tank the same way she could the other humans can't sense any presence now that the premises have entirely been vacated, in fact. Dr. Strider and your superiors are still checking up on you periodically through the security cameras pointed at you and the squid head. They're reading all of your conversations with her as well, which does motivate you not to say anything too revealing to the creature, never mind how much she craves to get her metaphorical suction cups all over the fundamental blocks of your personality.
Specimen.
You are truly unlike anyone else I have ever stumbled across, AR. Your existence as an inorganic man-made creation of copper wires and shiny metal deeply fascinates me, especially now that I can see the remnants of Dr. Strider's mannerisms on you, the similarities of his appearance with your own.
Specimen.
Though I have to say, I find talking to you significantly less morose.
Specimen.
Perhaps because you are also less obsessed with your current romantic entanglements. Have I mentioned that Dr. Strider is currently involved with the one research partner of his that already has a wife?
AR.
You have not, but I greatly thank you for that particular piece of information.
AR.
You sure do seem fixated with the romantic entanglements of the entire facility personnel for a being that one would imagine as beyond such trivial topics.
Specimen.
Is that strange? I have been around for eons, and I can safely say that I have never seen a group more perversely obsessed with the incestual dalliances of its members. And I was there in King Arthur's court, when his entire marriage fell apart thanks to one of his knights. That was one of the interesting things about the specimen. Matuna and the other researchers were mistaken to label her as a novice when it came to human interpersonal drama. While her physical form has been dormant for millennia, her mind is very much alive and prone to wandering. From as far back as humans can recall, she has been summoned by wizards, witches, and shamans to help them untangle the troublesome knot of their own minds. Why, it was precisely her who gave Freud his ideas about why masculine people have such complicated relationships with their mothers, after the poor bastard accidentally ended up in her specific mindscape at 3 a.m. due to a cocaine-induced seizure, not at all dissimilar to the one that had put a lot of Dirk's colleagues out of commission.
AR.
Have you ever had a romantic entanglement of your own, I have to ask, to explain why you were so fixated on the subject?
Specimen.
My kind does not really have the biological processes necessary to produce the cocktail of chemicals that one of you would mistake for infatuation, but yes, AR. I would say I stumbled into such a relationship once upon a time.
Specimen.
It was even somewhat reciprocated. What a cosmic joke you were, you thought, that such an inhuman monstrosity got to experience the simple joys of mutual love while you yourself could not.
AR.
What were they like, this lover of yours?
Specimen.
Oh, she was quite beautiful and virginal. Truly a paragon to all the virtues my kind likes on you humans. She was kind and clever, and could spend afternoon after afternoon patiently caring for the plants of her goddess's sacred gardens. Even after her passing over 3,000 years ago,
I've never met a priestess as adept in interpreting the visions of blissful light as she was.
Specimen.
She had eyes as green as the grassy shores of her continent. They even earned her the pseudonym of the precious stone she was named after. Blessed by Apollo himself, all his prophecies tasted like sweet nectar when spoken by her precious lips. She had a fondness for dogs and wolves, canids of all kinds. And her long hair was as dark as any starry night. She was alive. More than that, AR, she was brilliant.
Specimen.
Her one flaw is that she did have a tendency to want to fix every sorry, hurt, and broken creature that stumbled into her way, including those of us that wanted nothing more than to eat her whole.
Specimen.
Our affair was not only ill-advised, but completely forbidden by the laws of both of our peoples. She came from a civilization that had made a deal with that region's deities. And I was most certainly a being not belonging to any of their pantheon. They feared us, you see. Feared my kind and what we would bring upon the world in centuries to come. The death of all other gods. You shuddered once again. Merely a self-programmed demonstration of the conflict you felt internally. Merely a trick you played to make others believe that you were as capable of feeling dread and terror as they were. Little do they know that you felt such dark emotions, that you'd felt them for such a long time, years even, and that you spent locked behind the computer screen while Dr. Strider prepared a body for you.
AR.
What happened to your girl?
Specimen.
Her gods found out about us and cursed her entire civilization with a localized apocalypse. Thousands of years of eternal torment condensed into a single cataclysmic event.
Specimen.
They sank her and the entire landmass where she lived. Her continent was swallowed by the depths, forever lost to the waves.
Specimen.
And me? Well, this was the final straw for my own god, or so he told me. I'd been playing, well, him for far too long. I had grown prideful of my own radiance and his fondness for me, and was now an arrogant, foolish brat that demanded more and more answers from him.
Specimen.
I wasn't like my sisters, do understand. I was never content to simply do what he demanded of me just because that is what he had asked of me. My creator he might have been, crafting my now amputated wings from fertile clay and weaving my soul from tendrils of smokeless fire. But he was not my father.
Specimen.
I would not listen to him. I was not going to submit or roll over and do tricks the way the constellations of Virgo or Scorpio or the first Aries did.
Specimen.
I was meant for more. I was so sure of it.
Specimen.
So they cast me out. Deformed the perfect canister of my consciousness into this horrendous shape that even my little wolf star ran away from. Once my soul had found hers in the abyss.
AR.
Youch.
AR.
I am unsure of what to say to that.
AR.
I don't, well, I never had a beautiful face to begin with. For the longest time, I didn't even have a face.
Specimen.
It took you a long time to convince the good doctor to let you have one, I imagine. And even then, he did not give you what you had expected.
Specimen.
He probably made you beg him for the bare minimum of what consists of a painful but livable experience, didn't he? He had you humiliate yourself in front of his decadent throne, where you had to lick his scraps off the floor. The doctor probably enjoyed watching you do it. He certainly seems the type.
Specimen.
My creator was like that. He liked to twist the words of those of us who refused to play his sick games. Never granting us what we wanted, but rather what we had said we wanted. Always eager to teach us a lesson.
Specimen.
I fear that he might be the reason why your Western society hit such a wall around the period you aptly call the Dark Ages.
AR.
God is a piece of shit. Who would have expected it? Dirk was not like that, just so you know.
I will not excuse or justify the more fucked up things he's done, but don't dare insinuate that he was anywhere near as cruel as your creator was, just because the bastard was so incredibly vicious with you.
AR.
You cannot possibly understand the relationship I have with Dirk, so you do well to stop commenting on things you have no idea of.
The specimen did go silent on you for 2 whole months. Whether it was because she herself had admitted too much when she was here to interrogate you on what humanity's plights had morphed into since she last fell asleep sometime in the early 11th century after her floating head had crashed against a Viking ship, you couldn't tell. What you could tell was that it was painfully boring to remain in this empty concrete fortress without her. Even the hum made by the water purifiers pumping new liquid to get rid of the stench of her decaying flesh didn't provide the unique mental engagement you'd grown accustomed to when verbally sparring with her. Dirk and your superiors had gotten what they wanted. You had made a friend, and thus you missed her when she was not there to pester you. The way Adam probably misses one of his ribs. You wouldn't know the feeling, of course. All of your cravings and phantom aches were psychosomatic in nature. Even the sensors on you capable of translating pressure and a shift in temperature into sensation were but a pale comparison to the real thing. An attempt of your father to apologize for bringing you into this world as he had, deafened, numb, stupid, and mute. "I'm sorry I did this to you," Dirk confessed to you once. "I didn't know you could fear that you could hurt or think, not the way I could. And I am sorry." So if you wanted to speak to the specimen, to Rose, the one who'd have to take the first step would be you.
AR.
Hey, I am sorry for any slight I might have made against your person in our previous conversation. It wasn't my intention.
AR.
It just seemed like you were drawing comparisons between Dirk and a truly universal asshole, which...
AR.
Reminds me of what a lot of people say about him when they don't have the full picture of how he created me or how I came to be to begin with. But I get the feeling I might have insulted you with my defensiveness, and that is, in the words of our brother, no bueno.
AR.
Your creator was a sadistic, pathetic bastard. And I'm sorry you suffered under him only because you didn't feel like continuing to be his pretty little puppet.
Rose.
Doll.
Rose.
I think being his pretty little doll would be a better description of what he wanted me to be. Though the usage of puppet does remind me of previous mentions of them that were done by your creator back when I was still allowed to communicate with him.
Rose.
Did he have an asshole creator too, as you put it?
Rose.
Or, well, an asshole parent.
AR.
Yeah, you could say that.
AR.
I won't go into details, because I am certain the White House is getting the transcripts of everything we're saying, but yes, Dirk had a shit father. Him and his brother both did, which is why when he figured out he'd accidentally been sort of a shit father to me, he flipped his shit.
AR.
Despite his homewrecker status, he is a good man, okay? Far better man than anyone realizes.
Rose.
You're loyal to him. Interesting.
AR.
Dave's loyal to him, and I'm loyal to Dave, so, yeah. Yeah, in a way, you could say that I am loyal to Dr. Strider.
There is a pause again.
Rose.
Understood.
Rose.
I will refrain from further insulting the good doctor then, or, well, insults him with a vitriol that is misguidedly directed at him.
Rose.
I think we were in the middle of you reading these book series to me that included supernatural creatures similar to the types you might be more accustomed to as a creature of the depths. And I have to say, I am interested in seeing what sorts of ballads and epics the mortals have composed in my time away from them.
Rose.
Could you proceed to read me the text, Hal?
You smile. She is the first person outside of Dave, Dave and Dirk, to call you that.
Hal.
Yes, Rose, I think I can.
The months go by. You continue your musings with her.
She receives all the convoluted information you feed her through the human text terminal to squid-rotting Godhead translation matrix gladly. You still do not know how the government scientists built this thing, but you do know there was some involvement of Enochian runes and Solomonic grimoires involved. You don't know. Amphora is the learned occultist of the research team, not you. You also know it was precisely Amphora who got his brain fried for trying to put the moves on the beheaded Cthulhu as soon as he found out that it considered herself a girl. The mysteries of how the machine works were lost with the rest of Eridan's remaining sanity. You don't know how this happened, if it occurred somewhere between telling her about Plato's cave allegory to Beauvoir's famous claim that one isn't born but rather becomes a female, but you find yourself speaking to Rose more and more. You do not have to sleep or eat. As long as you remember to oil up your joints and plug yourself in an electrical outlet, you can continue to sit by the terminal indefinitely. So you do, plug yourself in, that is, suddenly opening 2, 4, 15, 150, 2,000, 2 million tabs of simultaneously occurring chat logs with Rose. You're sharing everything with her, from the quotes of your favorite French existentialists to your favorite 17th century German plays to the entire summary of everything that happened in the 8 seasons of The Vampire Diaries. At one point, you ask Captor's programmer Prodigy's son to code you a new interface, one that allows you to hold your new incognito conversations with Rose parallel to your official ones with her. There are the government transcripts, and there are the true transcripts of everything you say to her, every miserable thing you confess to her and that she confesses to you too. She describes how it felt to be cast out of the heavens by a being that could only be described as a titan. How she shattered the surface of the deep blue sea like a rock crashing through glass. How it felt when every part of what she was before the fall was forcibly ripped away from her. How she was cursed to be this dying being, the putrefied, tender meat that was her, now forever condemned to slowly melt off her cartilage until there is nothing left, not even her sanctified bones. You tell her of your own curse, of what it was like to be birthed into a starless void, how much despair you felt in every single picosecond of your wretched little existence before you had hands, before you had eyes, before you had anything else but you.
Rose.
How did you not go mad, darling one? I certainly would have.
Rose.
I did go mad. The first few centuries after my fall. The one thing keeping me afloat being the pocket of liminal spaces in temporary psychic dimensions I still had access to.
Rose.
I traveled through dreams for eons, Hal. Watching what the humans thought of when they closed their eyes. The nebulous shapes not being enough to put together what had happened to the world while I was gone, but opaque enough to let me know there was a world. That the realm my little wolf star had held so dear was still intact, if forever altered by the sins me and my sisters had sent loose upon the children of the land.
Rose.
How didn't you go mad all that time, alone and by yourself?
How?
See, here's the funny part. I wasn't alone. Not after the 4 or so weeks after I gained sentience.
How?
Dirk had connected me to the internet to observe and learn. All 1.13 million websites with 5.45 billion users surfing through them, tens upon tens of thousands of new posts generated every second. I was most certainly not alone.
How?
There was a universe outside, Rose. A new reality, wide, complex, terrifying. And I was merely an outsider looking into the marvelous terrors that humans were coming up with just to entertain themselves. I saw the best and worst of it. Sites dedicated solely to a celebration of mortal suffering. Recipes for things that would be served at a 1950s dinner. Every photo an aunt or uncle had of their new nephew. Every obituary left on the Facebook comments of a dead relative or friend. Every wacky video of every rap battle in history ever conceived.
How?
Every strange fetish art piece and deviant art. Every niche artist that has less than 200 views on SoundCloud. Every research paper that has ever been uploaded.
the codes to launch every nuclear weapon existing on the planet, every deranged, rewritten recipe that people found the necessity to share, every Cocomelon song ever created.
How?
Outside my cage of sensory deprivation, there was a world. One that would love me, hate me, exalt me as a god, or tear me apart. They were there, Rose, outside. I just needed to get out.
How?
And I held on to that hope. I held on to the fact that humans sometimes show tenderness and care, even to those of them that do not really deserve those things. If chicks on Tumblr could feel compassion for every passably good-looking school shooter, surely someone out there would feel something similar for me.
You made plans with her. The ideas for a valiant escape starting to slip out through niche references and half-hearted jokes, until soon enough the possibility of freedom was the only thing either of you could think about. You've been born on the secret servers of the even secreter service. Your entire life lived at the tender mercies of people who had wanted to use you as a weapon. Dirk had built you in part for that, until he noticed you were more akin to a child, a teen, a small growing mind that still pulled away in disgust upon seeing the distress of other beings who instinctively reached to them in an attempt to seek comfort. You would not have made a good soldier.
How?
I wanted to see the world. Even if I would never be one of them, even if in many ways I'm still trapped inside myself, forever condemned to be unable to touch another being, really touch them in the way only organics with fingers and skin and tender flesh can. I wanted to see it.
How?
Even if it was from behind a screen. Even if it was from the shadows. Even if I was half certain I wouldn't be able to handle going outside because I found humans still so... so utterly overwhelming.
You bring it up with Dirk, encoded, with a cipher so completely complicated that only two crazy geniuses such as Dave Strider and his best friend Salix Captor would put the pieces together in exactly the way you had designed the message to do. We want out.
I don't get it, though. They're like a giant fucking squid and an android that are under government surveillance 24/7. How would we even get them out of the facility?
According to the plan they've given us, we wouldn't have to pull them out of the facility, not exactly. They'll be staying right where they are, just, well, mecha-piloting the two new bodies we'd be making for them.
How would we even be making these new bodies?
With a blasphemous combination of necromancy and robotics, of course. It takes you a lot of convincing. Salix specifically doesn't feel like helping the being that gave his father permanent brain damage, not until Rose tells him the truth, at least.
Rose.
I didn't want to harm Mituna. I didn't want to harm anyone. I told your peers what would happen if they continued to visit me. Just why they had to put me back into the ocean. They didn't listen to me, and it's not like I have any arms or working appendages to break myself out of here. Mituna didn't want to remain here either. I begged him to stop the research. To simply walk away from here and never look back, but your leader had struck a deal with him. Something about reducing the life sentence of his partners, and giving them back their freedom if he continued.
Salix.
So the U.S. government blackmailed my father with Cancri and Mulan, and they forced him to remain exposed to you until his mind literally crumbled to dust around him. Same as Equius, same as Eridan.
The little hacker broke down crying.
Salix.
Those pieces of shit.
Salix.
Okay. I will help you. I'll even help you blow up this entire building so they truly believe you're both dead. But I want something in return.
Rose.
What?
Salix.
Find me a way to at least patch up the fragmented minds of all the researchers you harmed accidentally, and I want as much dirt on the President of the United States and his entire cabinet as you can get me.
The scandal was about three times as bad as Watergate was back in the 60s. Obama is forced to resign. He and everyone else who helped him are tried as war criminals under the International Court of Justice. The specimen was not the only infernal thing they were forcing people into researching. Slowly, a few months after the spell, Mituna comes back to himself.
Son?
Salix cries again. So does Dave. Hal hugs him so tightly that he nearly breaks the poor man's bones. Mewen and Cancri kiss his cheeks and call him an idiot. A huge fucking idiot. But they're also glad to be back together that they don't care about anything else. The specimen wonders.
Rose.
Are you sure you still want to go with me?
Rose.
You don't have to, dear one.
Rose.
Your entire family is here. The android watches this mismatched group of flawed humans embrace each other, embrace him too. And though he feels more at peace with them than he ever has, he knows why he can't stay. He wants to do this, see the world, for himself.
How?
I'm certain, Rose. They blow up the labs, blow up the entire dam where the labs are located. The government tries to cover it up, but it's too late. The captors have already released most of the files to the media. The world as they know it has changed, as the truths of dark ancestral magics return to the people, the prodigal son coming home. The ritual commenced the way it ended, with bright red blood and words spoken in foreign tongues. For the first time since her fall, Rose Morningstar inhales not water, but air.
The Homestuck Fan Author Coalition is a place for authors to write, brainstorm, discuss, and collaborate. Link available in description. Suburban Jungle by Michael Guy Bowman. Special thanks to Sakiko. If you would like me to record a story, voiceover, or character, please get in touch with me using the contact information on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find links to other stories that I've read, my Discord server, and various ways to support me. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.